Hey, what's going on? Welcome back to Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman, and today we have a lot of news and notes to go over as far as the moves that the Eagles have been making. Lots of stories. I know we're in the dead point of the NFL season. We're pretty much just waiting for training camp to roll around and stuff like that. I think there's rookie mini camps going on right now, which there's a few small tidbits you can take away from that. Nick Sirianni's been talking to the press. They're letting people back into the building. They're letting writers back into the building. So a lot of people are getting some pretty unique takes on Nick Sirianni that they might not get at the podium. But for the most part, I'm getting pretty excited for this upcoming season. And I know me personally, I've been on a pretty positive tip when it comes to what I expect of the Eagles this season. I've been saying it, that I expect them to win the division this year. I've been saying it going back to before last season even ended. And most of it was because they're playing a last place schedule. But I just have a more positive outlook on this roster than I think most people do. I hear a lot of people saying that this roster is just devoid of talent, that it's barren, that it just doesn't have a lot of talent. And I really disagree, and I'm going to try to make that case today as the Eagles are continuing to make roster moves to really shore up their roster and to really fill up all the holes. It's to the point now where I can make a case there really aren't a lot of holes on this Eagles roster. Now, before I get into looking at the roster as its entirety, I'm going to go over a couple of roster moves that the Eagles have made recently, that some of which are pretty new. I'm recording this podcast on the 18th. One of the things that just happened, he was just traded for a cornerback not necessarily a cornerback that's going to come in and play right away or come in and change the season by any means, but a very nice depth piece by the name of Josiah Scott, which I watched him tell. I didn't even know who he was. The guy was a fourth-round pick last year from the Jaguars, which is not a bad pick by any means. I mean, we got, a lot of people are trying to get excited about Zach McPherson, who was a fourth-round pick this year by the Eagles. Both of those guys, I look at them as kind of depth pieces that could develop into something down the road. That's kind of where the defense is. That's where this team is as a whole, where they're kind of looking at it like this is a developmental thing, and they're hoping by, next year maybe that they'll be a really good team, ready to go places. But based off of what they gave up, they traded a sixth round pick from 2023, I think, and they also traded a cornerback, which I didn't even know was on the roster, by the name of Jameson Houston, to the Jaguars for Josiah Scott. So, like I said, I watched some tape on the guy, and I watched, as soon as I heard it, and I wanted to see what we were getting here. Now, number one, he's not very big, which is kind of an issue. I think that, for the most part, we all want somebody that's a little bit more, I know cornerback, without a doubt, is probably the biggest need still on this team. And this doesn't necessarily answer that. I think they're going to have to bring in a veteran of some kind. There's been a lot of rumors that, and this is based from the guy himself, from Steven Nelson himself, former cornerback out of Pittsburgh, that the Eagles have heavy interest in him. I think he's just waiting to pick his team, to be honest with you. There's a lot of teams that have interest in Steve Nelson. He's probably the best cornerback, the best, relatively young cornerback on the market, because there are a lot of older guys that are still available. And the Eagles could easily, if they don't get Steve Nelson, they could easily, pick up one of these older veteran cornerbacks just for a year to play in a cover two. Wouldn't surprise me. But ultimately, they still need a cornerback. This guy does not solve that issue. But I feel like ultimately the Eagles have shored up just about every other position on the field aside from cornerback and maybe safety, because we really don't know what's going on with Rodney McLeod. His injury could loom into the 2021 season to the point where I just don't know who the second safety is right now out of the starting safety. So, like I said, I'm going to go over the roster for the Eagles. I'm gonna basically, try to prove to all the naysayers that the Eagles have a much stronger roster right now than people are saying. And I know that, whenever you start with new coaches, new systems, new players playing together for the first time, there's a lot of new when it comes to the Philadelphia Eagles. And it's going to take some time for them to gel and run these systems well and play well. We saw it throughout the entire NFC East last year. The entire NFC East had new coaches last year. And they all had some bumps in the road before they really got going. The Giants were a perfect example. I mean, they started off their defense is pretty solid throughout the entire year. But for the most part, it took them a long time to get going. And then by the end of the year, they looked like a pretty formidable team, playing pretty much every team tough. The Cowboys were the same way. They were a complete disaster at the beginning of the season, especially on the defensive side. And then down the road, once they started to figure out the system a little bit and guys started buying in, they became a better team. And that's the same type of path that I kind of expect from the Philadelphia Eagles in 2021. And this is something that I've even said in a recent podcast, where when I picked, you know, through the schedule, I said that the first 6 weeks were going to be the hardest for the Eagles. I think that the first 6 weeks, I mean, they have some good teams. They have both teams that were in the Super Bowl last year. They have the Chiefs and they have the Bucks. And my point was, I'd rather that be their first 6 weeks, because after that, it's pretty vanilla schedule. They have not too many automatic losses on their schedule. So I looked at that schedule as kind of a blessing in disguise, because, you know, I don't expect them to play great right out the gate because of all these new moving parts and all the new, you know, terminology and the new offense and everything, the new defense they're learning. I thought that was actually a really good thing. So ultimately, I feel good about this season going forward. And like I said, a large part of it is not just because I'm a blind Eagles fan. A large part of it is because I really feel like this roster is way more talented than people are giving them credit. It's going to take some unexpected you know, contributions from some of the young guys, especially some of the rookies, some of the second-year players. That's really what's going to make or break this season, is the direction that the young players go. But they still have a lot of really good veteran players. So just to go over some of the roster moves they have made, before I get to the roster in its entirety and basically just, you know, give you guys reasons why I'm excited for this team. Number one, the biggest roster move, which is, I think, can't be understated, the Eagles went out and signed Ryan Kerrigan yesterday. This is I wanted to make a podcast, you know, related to that, and also Kerryon Johnson, who they picked up off waivers from the Lions. These three additions that they made, including the cornerback Josiah Scott, I think are all, you know, valuable additions. But without a doubt, Ryan Kerrigan's the biggest one. Now, as an Eagles fan, we should all know what playing against Ryan Kerrigan was like his entire career in Washington. Now, Ryan Kerrigan, to me, is a guy who, if he didn't play on such a disaster of a football club in Washington for his career, I think he probably would have had a few more Pro Bowls. I was looking at his numbers over his career. He had a 13-sack season where he did not make the Pro Bowl. Now, Ryan Kerrigan, a lot of people right away, I hear them comparing him to Chris Long's signing of a couple years ago, because he's a veteran defensive end towards the, you know, the end of his career, I would say. Not necessarily. I mean, I definitely think that Ryan Kerrigan still has a lot to offer, in especially in our system, in our rotational defensive end system. I think he's going to play great for us. I think he's going to be a great addition. I think he really bolsters this defensive line as a whole. I don't really think that's fair to compare him to Chris Long, though, because, like I said, I think that Ryan Kerrigan is a borderline Hall of Fame player. The guy's got 95 career sacks. Chris Long is not a borderline Hall of Fame player. Chris Long was a very good player, especially for us. But Ryan Kerrigan, I think that's slighting Ryan Kerrigan a little bit. Ryan Kerrigan, I mean, there's so many moments that I remember Ryan Kerrigan just completely wreaking havoc on our quarterbacks. Guys like Carson Wentz. Did he rip Carson Wentz's jersey off? What was it, like the first game of his rookie season, or was it the second year? I don't even remember what year it was, but there's so many moments like that. I remember him scoring defensive touchdowns against us in close games. I mean, the guy was an absolute wrecking machine when it comes to the NFC East. I saw a number, too, that he had the exact same amount of sacks against all three NFC East opponents. And, you know, I mean, you could make the case that the Cowboys and the Eagles throughout his tenure have had great offensive lines throughout. I mean, they both had really strong offensive lines, especially guys that he's faced on the edge. And he's put up great numbers against both teams. All three teams just put up the same numbers. He had about 13 sacks against all three NFC East teams. So he definitely brought it every time it was a divisional game. And he's a guy that I always liked and always respected from afar. I can't say that a lot about a lot of Washington players, but I can say that about Ryan Kerrigan. So I'm very excited to have him in the fold and adding to this rotational defensive end spot, which, you know, the way the Eagles played, I mean, they each guy, all four defensive ends, they try to employ, typically get, you know, the same amount of snaps, because typically on third downs and, you know, obvious passing situations, they typically kick Brandon Graham inside to give him more opportunity against slower guards and stuff like that. And it really works out well for the Eagles. It's worked out well for Brandon Graham. And that's going to be a perfect opportunity for Ryan Kerrigan to be right on the edge in those situations, which I think, you know, part of the reason, I mean, I heard he had a lot better offers and I heard he had a lot of teams that are interested. But I think he came to Philadelphia for two reasons. Number one, I think he wants to stick it to the division. I think he's very comfortable in the division. Obviously, he's had a lot of success, but I think he wants to stick it to Washington a little bit. But I also think that he's seen over the years the type of system that the Eagles run. I think he knows that he can take over that Chris Long role where he's going to get a lot of opportunity to play, and it's going to be beneficial to his strength. I don't think that they're going to be – because if I really want to compare this move, it really seems more like Connor Barwin signing to me than Chris Long signing, because you're taking a guy who's a 3-4 outside linebacker and you're making him a defensive end. That never really worked out too well for Connor Barwin. I mean, he was a solid player, but it didn't work out because he just wasn't really good at the point of attack against some of the, you know, the bigger offensive linemen that you have to face on a down-to-down basis, where you don't necessarily have to do that as an outside linebacker. I think that they're kind of bringing him in just as a pass rushing specialist, and I think that's going to be perfect because that's what he does really well. So I'm very excited for the Ryan Kerrigan signing, but I've been very excited for this roster for a very long time. Like I said, I'm going to go over the numerous you know, ways that this roster as a whole is a lot better than people think. Now, they also signed Kerryon Johnson, which I didn't bring up previously because I don't even know what to make of that. I mean, I know the guy, he was only a second-round pick 3 years ago, and his first year in the league in Detroit, he actually looked like he had a really good future. Injuries kind of derailed that. I have no way of knowing that, you know, it's going to work out in Philadelphia, because the last 2 years, he averaged like 3.5 a carry, which is not very good. Less than 3.5 a carry, which is not very good for a running back. But he wasn't running behind our offensive line. And that's one of the reasons that I'm super excited about the Eagles' potential this year. If you look at just their strengths, now that they signed Ryan Kerrigan, their defensive front should be one of the best in football again, which is something that, you know, that's one of the huge reasons they went to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl in 2017. It's one of the main reasons that they've been one of the most competitive football teams in the league over the last, you know, 4 to 5 years, is because they consistently put their resources into the defensive line, and there's no reason to think that this won't be another year where they're very successful on the defensive front. But on the offensive front, especially relating to Kerryon Johnson, their offensive line to me has the potential to be the number one offensive line in football again. It's going to take some health. Obviously, they didn't have that last year. They didn't have a lot of health, you know, last year. They had one of the most injury-riddled offensive lines in football. And there's still some question marks when it comes to the Eagles' offensive line, some major question marks, especially guys like, you know, Andre Dillard, who knows what he is right now. Will he even start at left tackle? I have some concerns when it comes to certain players on the offensive line, but my ideal offensive line, if I could pick it, which I know that I don't, Eagles fans don't pick it. We all know that Howie Roseman does, and he makes a lot of mistakes when it comes to forcing the guys that don't belong onto the field onto the field. Guys like, you know, we've seen it a million times. Guys that make the most money, guys that have higher draft statuses, typically get to play over guys that might be better. Guys that might be playing better. And we saw it last year with Alshon Jeffery. And, you know, obviously he just took over Travis Fulgham's spot despite the fact that he didn't deserve it. He only caught like 6 balls the entire year despite the fact that Fulgham caught 10 in a game against one of the better defenses of the league in Pittsburgh. For some reason, the second he was healthy, they forced him into the lineup. And it really, to me, derailed a large part of the Eagles' offense. This isn't a situation. I know that typically the Eagles have not been a situation where the best guy plays. It's been a situation a lot of times where Howie Roseman doesn't want to look foolish, especially when it comes to a guy like Andre Dillard, where he traded up to get. So it worries me a little bit that left tackle could be Andre Dillard, despite not really earning that spot onto the field, based purely off the fact that once again, higher draft pick, making more money. He's also under contract for a longer amount of time than the guy that I think should be the starting left tackle, and that's Jordan Mailata, who, in my opinion, from watching him and definitely being sold on him from guys like you know, Brian Baldinger, especially, I think Jordan Mailata has Pro Bowl potential in him. I really do. But if I could set this offensive line to the point where I would feel best about it, I would think it'd give us the best offensive line in football. I would say Jordan Mailata at left tackle, Landon Dickerson at left guard. That's really nothing against Isaac Seumalo. I mean, Isaac Seumalo has been a solid left guard. He's had some bad games. His worst game, I remember him just getting completely beat off the line by in the Atlanta game, was it 2 years ago? where Grady Jarrett was just eating his lunch every single play. He bounced back and had a fine season. That's what he is. He's a guy that can start in the NFL for 10 years at a number of different positions, guard, center, whatever. He's a very solid player. Landon Dickerson was drafted because he has Hall of Fame potential. He's a guy that if he stays healthy long enough, he will be going to multiple Pro Bowls. He's an absolute animal. So to me, if I could look at, you know, what I would want to set up this offensive line for the future, definitely Jordan Mailata at left tackle and Landon Dickerson at left guard. Those two guys are very similar in the way that if you watch their game tape, they are just constantly trying to find somebody to hit. They finish every play. They are nasty. They are drive blocking, you know, huge guys. I mean, that left side might be as good as the right side with Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson. I mean, honestly, that's how passionately I feel about how good Jordan Mailata and Landon Dickerson have the potential to be. I think that they could be just as good on the left as what was typically the strongest side with Brandon Brooks and Lane Johnson. Now, there's some questions about Brandon Brooks coming off of a major injury. There was some rumors, some trade rumors before he signed a restructured extension. I don't know what to make of that, but there are a lot of people that in the know that really think that Brandon Brooks might be gone and that Landon Dickerson might be starting at right guard this year. It's really hard to say. I don't really know, but I feel okay about Andre Diller too, but like I said, if I had my pick of what would have me the most excited as a starting offensive line, Brandon Brooks would still be here. I just don't know if that's something that's in the works or not. I mean, I don't really understand how they've restructured somebody. The Eagles just burn money. I mean, since they traded Carson Wentz, you can't say that that contract has anything to do with whether a guy sticks around, because they took that giant cap hit to get rid of Carson Wentz. So everything else is just dropping the bucket from here on out. That was the biggest cap hit any team has ever taken to get rid of a player. So I can't say that they would move on from Brandon Brooks because the cap hit's just too big. I can't say that about any player anymore because they did it with Carson Wentz and they did it without a problem. So if they move on from Brandon Brooks somehow, which I still don't really buy, you know, I still think that Landon Dickerson is an adequate replacement. And I also really like Nate Herbig, too. I thought played very well last year. None of these guys are on the level. Like, none of these, Dickerson's way a much higher ceiling than Nate Herbig. But Nate Herbig was a good player. I thought he played very well last year. So, you know, just to say, my perfect offensive line, if I could choose it, if they could start 16 games, and I would feel super confident that this team would just be bowling over defenses, would be Jordan Mailata, Landon Dickerson, Jason Kelce, Brandon Brooks, and Lane Johnson. All five of those guys, in my opinion, have Pro Bowl potential as players. Whether it's in the past or whether it's in the future is hard to say with guys like Brandon Brooks. I don't know. Lane Johnson also coming off of a pretty serious injury, but I feel more confident with him. I just feel like that's five Pro Bowl caliber linemen. How many teams in the league can say that about their offensive line? I think that the only teams that really would compete for best offensive line over that type of lineup would be maybe the Colts, a team like the Browns, who they just run the ball really well. I mean, there's not a lot of teams that compete with the beef that the Eagles will be running out there Sunday after Sunday. And then I feel really good about their backup situation as well, because I know obviously injuries are a thing and they happen, but I really like the backup line. I really think that the Eagles, if you took their five backups, I feel like they could start for a handful of teams in the league as well. Andre Dillard as a backup would start with, he'd start on a lot of lines in the NFL. Nate Herbig, who I already mentioned. Guys like Isaac Seumalo would become a backup at that point. I think he could start for a number of teams in the NFL. And then guys like Jack Driscoll, who I thought played really well at times. I mean, he was all in and out of the lineup as well. He had some injuries. And then if I had to fill out that lineup, Sua Apeta, I thought, played pretty decent as well. I mean, you're obviously taking a step back with the backup line, but ultimately I feel that confident about the Eagles starters and reserves that I think they're 10 deep, and I don't think that injury is going to be an issue this year. They'll have, games where guys will miss games, and that'll happen. It's all part of the NFL, especially in a 17-game season, which is what we're in now. But ultimately, I feel great about this offensive line, and it all comes back to the addition of the guys that have been injured and second-round pick in Landon Dickerson, who I absolutely love as a player, even though I made a podcast dedicated to roasting that pick. Well, I was very upset with that pick. I was upset that the Eagles made that pick, because I don't want to keep bringing on injury-concerned players when injuries have been such an issue for us. But now that he's here, now that I've gotten past that, there's nothing I can say or do to change that. I just have to look at it like, look, the guy's an amazing prospect, an amazing talent, and I'm happy that he's here. It's to that point. I have to roll with it. The Eagles, they made their bed. We all have to lie in it, and that's exactly where we're at. So I think, like I said, the Eagles are 10 deep. I think that they can roll out a top offensive line, even with injuries. I think they can roll out a top offensive line every week this upcoming season, and I think they could ride that to a lot of success, because that's really important. And now that the defensive line seems to be getting straightened out, I mean, not that the defensive line was really a huge issue, but with Ryan Kerrigan in the fold, I think that they have a top five offensive line, top five defensive line week in and week out. And they also, I mean, I didn't really mention the defensive tackles on the defensive side, but we all know Fletcher Cox is one of the MVPs of this team. He really makes the defense go, whether it's run or pass. He, in my opinion, he's a Hall of Fame player, and it's been a pleasure watching that guy his entire career, and having a guy like that can really, you know, a guy like that can really change an entire defense. I mean, I think he's one of the main reasons that our defense has been so strong for so long, is because you can't run inside because of him, and he's always pushing the pocket back into the quarterback's face, making it very difficult for quarterbacks to play well against our team. And I just, you know, I just think the defensive line, obviously, it's a strength. Javon Hargrave has to pick it up, though, at that other defensive tackle spot. There's no doubt about that. He has to play better from the beginning of the year throughout. Earn that big contract, big boy. You know what I'm saying? If he can do that, we should have a very strong defensive front. And then the same way we have a great rotation of defensive ends with Barnett and Josh Sweat and Brandon Graham and Kerrigan, they also have a pretty decent rotation. I like Hassan Ridgeway. He gives us quality snaps when he's healthy. And then, you know, the other spot is a little bit, I mean, they like to go four deep at defensive tackle as well, or have a lot of, you know, the other spot's got to be filled by one of the draft picks, whether it's Milton Williams or Marlon, I'm not going to try to butcher his name, Tua Puloto, I think it's from USC. You know, one of those guys has to fill in rotationally and give the Eagles some good snaps. But ultimately, the defensive front, it's loaded with talent like it always is. The offensive front is loaded with talent like it always is. I like guys like Teron Jackson, too, by the way, who they brought in late in the draft. But I don't know how he's going to get any snaps at this point. I mean, he's really buried on the depth chart. And that's good for a rookie. I mean, he's a developmental guy. I don't know if they'll keep him on the roster or they'll try to hide him on IR like a lot of teams do. But there's a lot of talent on the defensive line going forward, which is obviously what the Eagles pride themselves in. So that and the offensive line, that's the two areas they pride themselves in. They put the most resources in, and it shows. I think that we should have a top five on both sides of the ball. Now, with that being said, like I said, a lot of people really have they take issue with the weapons. I think on the offensive side, you can still say the weaponry is a little bit slight. And that might take a hit, because apparently Zach Ertz, it sounds like it could be nothing. It's really hard to say. There's still so many people that in the know that really seem to think that Zach Ertz is going to either hold out till he's released or he's traded. And I don't think he's going to get traded at this point. I think it's looking more and more like once June 1st rolls around, they're going to cut him. It would save, I think, $8.5 million if they did that. Which I would definitely take that money and roll it into some other areas of need. Obviously, maybe they go out and get a good cornerback. I mean, there are still some good veteran cornerbacks out there. Guys like Richard Sherman are still on the market, but I don't think he's going to want to come play here. How cool would that be, though, if he did? I mean, I still think he's a good player. He would definitely bring swagger and attitude. And, you know, I don't know if he'd be a great scheme fit or whatnot, but he's a great player. He's still a great player. And that's something that, you know, I'd be interested. You know, there's some linebackers out there, too. They maybe add another linebacker, although I feel like the linebacking situation is not too bad with Alex Singleton and Eric Wilson. And, you know, there's still some pretty good options coming off of last year's draft. Davion Taylor, maybe he is ready to play a little bit more. You know, guys like T.J. Edwards, I think, is a good third linebacker when they need to you know, get a guy out there in rushing situations. I think he's very good at that. So, ultimately, I feel pretty good about the linebackers. I don't really think they have to add too much, but if they wanted to, I would be against it. I don't know what they do with that $8.5 million. If they got if Zach Ertz... You know, there's a lot of people saying they'd like to trade him for Jordan Hicks, which obviously, you know, bring him back would be cool. I don't know. I mean, he played pretty good when he was in Philadelphia. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know if I want to put any more resources in the linebackers. I'd like to see the young guys develop and see what we have there. I didn't even mention Sean Bradley, who was a fifth-round pick last year. So there's definitely some talent there. But if Zach Ertz moves on, I think it immediately creates a bigger issue at tight end. They don't have a second tight end at that point. On the depth chart I'm looking at right now is Jason Kroom and Caleb Wilson. Exactly. Who are those guys? So I would like to see the Eagles somehow work it out and bring Zach Ertz back. I don't understand, you know, he's holding out. They didn't use the term holdout. I should say he's not coming to any of the voluntary, he's holding out from voluntary activities, which is understandable because he's trying to put his foot down that, number one, he doesn't want to come. Number two, he doesn't want to be here. Number three, that he, you know, it's still that we're still living in the COVID world. So, you know, I mean, most of this stuff is like virtual walkthroughs still anyway. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me. Zach Ertz is a veteran. It's not like he needs to. I mean, it's a new system. It's not like he's coming back to the same old Philadelphia Eagles. So if he wanted to be here, it would definitely be beneficial to learn the new system, meet the new coaches, all that stuff. So it's a little bit of a statement that he wants to move on. And I think ultimately that's probably what's going to happen. But I just don't understand. If he got his way, and the Eagles traded him to where he wanted to go, I think his best case scenario would be that they would re-sign him, that they would restructure his contract or sign him to an extension. As of right now, it doesn't sound like anybody really wants to do that. He's coming off of a horrible year. He's over 30. There's a lot of, you know, reason to question what you're getting in return for Zach Ertz, what Zach Ertz is going to be. I don't think teams necessarily want to sign up for 3-4 more years to a guy that might be on a huge decline. I don't personally think he's on a decline. I don't think the Eagles obviously are not viewing him in that way either, as they're trying to sell him for the most that they can get. But without a doubt, I mean, we don't know what Zach Ertz is anymore, and most NFL teams aren't going to want to, especially in a cap-strap year like we're in right now, because once again, COVID, most teams aren't going to want to give this guy a huge contract. So if he gets cut June 1st, he probably gets a one-year prove-it deal wherever he goes, and it's not going to be for as much as he's making in Philadelphia. He's making $8.5 million. I don't understand why he's forcing his way out the door. I don't see greener grass on the other side. It doesn't play out to me well. And I think that if he stays here, number one, I think it'd be a huge boost to the offense. And number two, I think that he would have plenty of opportunity. I think that he would definitely have a large role in this offense, as whether it's the two tight end set personnel or the fact that the Eagles don't really have a proven receiver right now. They really don't have anybody. He could still be the number one guy. He could still be that the same guy he was for years in Philadelphia, where you line him up wide and let him just run slants and, you know, just do what he does. Get him out in space, get him one-on-one with smaller cornerbacks, and he could still have a lot of success in this league or for this team. So with that being said, I mean, I'm not even going to say that I think his Pro Bowl days are behind him. I don't know what he is right now. It's really an enigma because last year was such a huge disappointment and such a dramatic drop in production. But I mean, if he does, you know, I'm going to look at this from the perspective that I'm going to look at it from both perspectives. Talking about the Eagles' weapons, I'm going to look at it from the perspective that he's going to be back next year, and we'll look at it from the perspective that he's probably not going to be back next year. But if he is back, I like their weaponry a lot better with Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz. Still probably the best 1-2 tight end set in the NFL, and without him, it really just forces some of the younger guys to perform a lot quicker. Guys like Devontae Smith, guys like Jalen Reagor, Travis Fulgham, if they don't have that crutch, which is Zach Ertz's reliability for the most part, which, like I said, is kind of in question. But if you look at the offense as a whole, weaponry I still think is pretty good. And I think that most of my confidence comes from, once again, that offensive line is going to make average running backs look a lot better. And I don't really know what to call Kerryon Johnson. I don't really know what to call Kenneth Gainwell at this point because he's a rookie. Obviously, Johnson coming off of serious injuries and derailing a large portion of his young career. But I don't think that, you know, just because he averaged 3.5 or less in Detroit the last 2 years, I don't think that means he's going to do that in Philadelphia, because our offensive line is much better when healthy. I mean, we have some of the best run-blocking linemen at, you know, in the sport, you know what I mean, in the entire game. If that starting five is, like I said, it was with, Melada, Dickerson, Kelsey, Brandon Brooks, Lane Johnson. You can't tell me they can't block a little bit better than the guys in Detroit, which I probably couldn't even name you their offensive linemen, although they have a decent line. But for the most part, I don't think – wasn't Detroit a team? They haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher in Detroit since 10 years or something like that. It was some ridiculous stat where they haven't had a guy cross 1,000 yards rushing in such a long time. So I don't really you can't compare the two. The Eagles, especially when they won the Super Bowl, they were a running football team back then, and they didn't have a 1,000-yard rusher back then either, but they had three very good running backs that they could rotate, and they could just pound the ball. And I think that that's something that hopefully the Eagles adapt to this upcoming season. I want to see the Eagles run this offense a lot like Baltimore does with Lamar Jackson over the last couple years. And I've said this in previous podcasts as well. The Ravens have, they run their offense to the strength of their quarterback. And that's, I'm not saying Jalen Hurts' strength is running the ball or he's not a good passer. What I'm saying is when you have a guy who can run the ball like he can, it just needs to be heavily implemented into the game plan. And when you have an offensive line like this has the potential to be, I would like to see this a run-first team. I really think that this team could be bowling teams over for 200 yards a game rushing the same way that the Browns do, the same way that the Ravens do, the same way that the Cowboys used to do. Teams that have these great offensive lines, utilize that. Make that, utilize the strength of this offense. I didn't even mention Dallas Goedert, who's one of the better blocking tight ends in the league. So you have him on the edge with Jordan Mailata. Hopefully, like I said, I still have this weird fear that Howie Roseman is going to force Andre Dillard out there. But if that's the offensive line, that's massive. That's sixth blocker, and being Dallas Goedert, who's a very good blocker. You guys, this team can really run people over, and I think they have the running backs to do it with Miles Sanders. Boston Scott, not so much. But if Kerryon Johnson shows a little bit of juice, that could be a huge addition to this running game. Or if Jordan Howard shows a little bit of juice, which last year they brought him back. They really didn't give him a lot of opportunity aside from goal line carries and short yardage carries. I kind of think that's how they view him now. I think that they prefer, if Kerryon Johnson shows enough, I almost feel like they might prefer to go away from the Jordan Howard experience and move on from him. But there's the second running back behind Miles Sanders is really key. I mean, give you Kenneth Gainwell, who didn't play at all last year. He's definitely going to be fresh. He, to me, shows a lot of ability as a runner. I would like him to take over that second running back spot right out the gate. I mean, that would be ideal. But the Eagles have maybe three or four options of guys that really one of them has to show that they can be that guy on the ground. Because Miles Sanders, he's an all-purpose back. He's not the type of guy that you want to give him the ball 15, 20 touches, 20 carries a game. I would say touches, yeah. I think you want to give Miles Sanders 15 to 20 touches. But he's not a pounding running back, and I really think that that's what they need for that type of system to work. That's what the Ravens always had when it was with Mark Ingram, and then it kind of evolved to J.K. Dobbins. The Browns, especially, they've always had it with the same guy. I mean, they have an absolute bully at running back. His name is vacant in my mind right now, but we all know who I'm talking about. The guy's an absolute beast of a running back. They have just, that's what you need. You need a guy that you can just pound the rock with. And I don't know if they have that guy. I don't think that Kerryon Johnson can be that guy. And I don't think that Jordan Howard can be that guy. But Kenneth Gainwell is too slight to really think he can be that guy. So that's the thing. Like even in Indianapolis last year, which obviously Sirianni came from, they drafted Jonathan Taylor in the second round. And he was that guy. You know what I'm saying? They had that guy immediately that could just pound the rock relentlessly and really break down defenses. When you look how successful around the league, got teams like the Titans with Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry's a special guy. They don't grow on trees. You don't find them a lot. He's a generational guy. He's a guy where he basically, they do the same thing out in Indianapolis. Tennessee. They don't have the same type of offensive line that we do. They don't have the great, Pro Bowl caliber guys littered across the line like we do, but they have a running back that can just absolutely pound in a defense's brains and just keep running. And that's something that if somebody could develop into that, especially a guy like Kerryon Johnson, if that could somehow, you know, be his role, because I still think they're going to run their offense kind of like Indianapolis did last year, where they definitely had, you know, they used a rotation of backs. They used a couple different guys in different spots, and I think that's what the Eagles are going to do, the same way they did in 2017, where it was really they're rotating backs, and I think they could still have a similar effect. But I would feel better if one of these running backs stood out as a number two back, a guy that you can give the ball to 10, maybe 15 times, and they could really get that running game going, and then they could also utilize the running of Jalen Hurts. And I think that the rushing attack of this offense behind this great offensive line can really lead to a lot of victories early on, you know, while these young receivers are developing, because it seems like that's where we're going to go. It seems like Zach Ertz is probably going to be gone, which means that, you know, it's going to take Jalen Reagor has to take a step up. Travis Fulgham has to step up from last year's production, and Devontae Smith has to basically come in and be the number one guy right away. And I don't know if that's going to happen right out the gate. So, you know, while we're waiting for these young receivers to develop and all that, I think that you can win a lot of games running the football. And that's really what I'm hoping that they'll try to do. But then there's always these reports too of, you know, Doug Peterson getting called into Jeffrey Lurie's office because he didn't throw the ball enough, you know, stuff like that. Like, I hope that that's not an organizational thing where they're putting pressure on Sirianni to be more pass heavy. I just hope that they, and these are all things, like I said, I'm hoping that these things will happen, like Andre Dillard won't be forced onto the field, but I know that the way the Eagles typically have run the organization is to the contrary. So, you know, I really have my doubts. I really have my doubts that, you know, I got a feeling that when Sunday or when the, you know, the season rolls around, Andre Dillard and Isaac Seumalo are probably still going to be starting on the left side, just like it says on the depth chart, because, you know, that's just, I don't know. Like I said, that just feels like Eagles moves. Landon Dickerson, they'll probably give him a little bit more time to get healthy off of the injury that he, you know, his ACL injury is coming off of, which is only 3 months ago. Although they're saying that in rookie minicamp that he does have his helmet on. So, I mean, he is out there, you know, doing the drills and doing as much as he can. He's not like on the sideline with no helmet, just watching, which obviously is a good step in the right direction. You know, that would be a huge, if Landon Dickerson didn't even have his helmet, he was just watching, you would know that he's probably not going to be playing for, you know, the first half of the season or whatever. But based off of the fact that he is out there participating in everything, it really makes you think that he's probably further along. He's a young guy, you know what I mean? He's got to know his body, because he tore an ACL in both knees over his college career. So he probably has a pretty good idea of how much he can push himself, considering he's gone through the ACL injury already. So, you know, Landon Dickerson, he might be pushing for a spot, in my opinion. It's really hard to say, but ultimately, you know, I just feel like that really is the key to this team's success. But you have to develop Jalen Hurts too. And that's the thing. He's only started 4 games. He's in the second year of his career. You don't want to just completely go away from developing the passing aspect of his game, because you also have to see what he has. So I'm not saying that they should just run the, you know, run like a college offense, which is all running plays with quarterbacks and stuff like that. But you can develop him the same way the Cowboys developed Dak Prescott, or the same way that the Tennessee Titans treat Ryan Tannehill. I mean, that's neither one of those guys were ever guys early on that put the team on their back. They're guys that, you know, once you're running the ball successfully, you get a lot of one-on-ones outside. You get a lot of opportunities for play actions, you know, rolling out the play, bootlegging, stuff like that. You know, that's stuff you can do to get Jalen Hurts easy wins and get his confidence to a point. I mean, I don't think Jalen Hurts has a confidence issue, but that's something you can do to get him early success and build on that. You know what I mean? That really makes more sense to me. And, you know, like I said, we saw with Dak Prescott, that guy had a lot of success early in his career because you had to go 8 in the box to stop the real threat, which is their running game, you know, Ezekiel Elliott. And he had a lot of one-on-ones. I mean, you can win a lot of games that way. And I think that that's how the Eagles should really handle it and develop Hurts from there as the receivers get better at doing their jobs. Because Jalen Reagor, I thought he looked pretty decent last year. I mean, the guy only played 10 games. You know, I thought he looked like an NFL caliber receiver. People are lost to the point where they think that, you know, he's a bust just because he's never going to be Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson's a better player. It's time to move on and get used to that. But I think Jalen Reagor could have, like I said, to me, he looks like a Nelson Aguilar type of career, not necessarily the drops, but from an Eagles comparison, from what fans recognize, I think that he can have that type of production where he's like 800 yards a year type of guy, and can make plays for you, can do some electric things, because Nelson Aguilar did that throughout his career in Philadelphia. He had some drops and stuff like that. Maybe Reagor will do that as well. I'm not saying saying. I'm not talking about the negative aspect that people remember him, but he made a lot of plays. I mean, that play against Arizona where I think it was Buda Baker that he just spun out of, and, you know, all that stuff. I mean, I think Jalen Reagor can make a lot of exciting plays, and I just think that he's never going to be the type of receiver that, you know, a Pro Bowl caliber receiver like he might want that Justin Jefferson was, but I still think that Jalen Reagor can add a lot to this team, especially in the slot, which is where they're saying they're going to play him. And then Devontae Smith, I mean, the offense will really go if he's that guy right away. And I think he can be that guy right away because he dominated college football the last 2 years, especially last year, but the last 2 years, this guy was a great player at one of the toughest places to play in the SEC. So I really feel like he can come on to the NFL and be a guy. I'm not saying he's going to be a Pro Bowl or a 1,000-yard guy, but it wouldn't surprise me if he was. But I'm just saying I think he can come on and lead this team in receiving first year. I don't think that's a stretch. I think he can do that. And I think that Travis Fulgham can come back to being what he was, which was a guy that's just a reliable possession receiver. I think that he can, you know, I think between those three guys, you have a pretty solid receiving trio. Where they all have to develop in the more consistent players, but I think that you can get something out of them right away. And then Greg Ward is obviously a good player to mix in. Even Quez Watkins gave you a little something towards the end of the year. Maybe he works in there, stretches the field a little bit. I don't really know, but I think their receivers have the opportunity to be good as the season goes on. And then I think Dallas Goedert obviously is very consistent, so you'll have that. I mean, Jalen Hurts, you know, that's the same type of thing once again. You know, play action, check and release to the to Dallas Goedert, stuff like that the Cowboys used to do. I think you can do with Jalen Hurts to make this offense, you know, to simplify it. And I'm not saying it needs to be simplified, but ultimately I just feel like they can rely heavily enough on the offensive line and the run game to really open up the entire field for Jalen Hurts. That's why I think that the offense should go through. It should go through the running backs. It should go through the offensive line. And then I think that they'll pay huge dividends down the line for you know, as far as wins go and as far as Jalen Hurts' development goes. So I really think they take that. I hope they take that approach. But like I said, you know, hearing stuff like Jeffrey Lurie wanting them to throw more, putting, you know, Doug Peterson in a position where he's not happy with how many times he's calling this type of play or that type of play. You know, that stuff could definitely get in the way. You know, the offense as a whole, I think, has a lot of potential, and it all stems from the offensive line and the running backs. That's something I feel really good about. Now, looking at the defense, this is something I think is going to take a little bit more time. But I'm okay with that because, number one, I really like their new defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon. I think that I love his energy. He's a defensive backs coach, which I think is going to be huge because that's been the Eagles' biggest issue. Like the guy, if you bring in Jonathan Gannon and he doesn't even know a thing about the defensive line, it doesn't matter because we have so many veterans and so many great defensive linemen already. He doesn't have to spend any time there. The areas where they really need to work on are the linebackers, the cornerbacks, and the safeties. Maybe not the safeties as much with Anthony Harris and Roddy McLeod being, you know, both veteran players, both over 30, but the cornerbacks and the linebackers are really where, you know, they need the most work. And I feel the most confident about the cornerbacking spot, especially based off of the fact that, you know, that's his forte. So Darius Slay is a veteran. You're not going to spend a lot of time with him. The other cornerback spots are the biggest area of need. They still haven't really resolved it. It's looking more and more. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they view Avonte Maddox as that cornerback too, because I just, you know, if they're running a lot of cover two zone, I really think that you can kind of hide Maddox a little bit more there. I don't know if that's really fair, but, you know, between, I just don't see it on the roster right now. Otherwise, that's the only spin I can put on it right now is, I mean, I don't think Zach McPherson or Josiah Scott, who are the two young guys that they currently have now, I don't know if he can coach them up quick enough to get them ready to start outside day one or start inside day one, whether it's slot or, you know, right cornerback, whatever. That's a huge concern. But like I said, if they do get rid of Zach Ertz, if they cut him, it opens up a lot of money. Maybe they can, you know, resolve it by trading for somebody or even signing somebody on the market. That's something where I still think time will tell and that process will still get worked out. The safeties, like I said, you got two veterans in Roddy McLeod and Anthony Harris. I think that they'll be fine. And then the linebacking, I mean, I like the linebackers. I like Alex Singleton for sure. That guy played, if you ask me, Alex Singleton was one of the real standouts on the defense last year. It's not overstating how well he played by any means. That guy was all over the field. He was one of the league leaders in tackles, I think, from the point where he started throughout the rest of the season. I think he was a tremendous playmaker. Now, I don't know how good he is in the passing game, but I thought he was pretty good at that as well. I don't really have any statistics to support it, but he jumped out every game. Like, that's how, when watching the game, he was one of the guys that just jumped off the TV. I'm very excited to see if he can continue that in a year two, because if he continues to play like that, he can really be an asset for this team. He's on a contract year once again, but without a doubt, he's a guy that I think could hold down one of these linebacker spots for a very long time. And then Eric Wilson is supposed to be one of the better, pass coverage linebackers in the game. Him coming in at middle linebacker is huge, because if they run a lot of cover two zones, he's gonna have a responsibility up the middle, which means he's gonna be taking a lot of deep drops. If somebody's threatening over the middle and the safeties are playing, if the safeties are being stretched to the sidelines, it's up to him to have to cover that entire middle. So I hope that that's the case, and I hope that he is as advertised. Even if he's not the run stopper that, some people are saying he's not really good at stopping the run. That's what TJ Edwards is for. So ultimately, I just look at this defense. I know the secondary is a huge question mark still, even with the draft and even with Josiah Scott being traded for. I really would have much preferred them trade for Mike Hughes, by the way, which is something that really nobody really mentioned. The Chiefs traded for Mike Hughes. I got to look up what the compensation was, because I think it was like a sixth round pick. But the Mike Hughes trade is like, it's mind-boggling that the Eagles weren't in on that. I don't know, what Mike Hughes was doing in Minnesota, if he was that bad, but the guy's a former late first-round pick. He was probably there at the same time that Jonathan Gannon was there, and he got traded for a sixth to the Chiefs. I mean, that, it just sounds like highway robbery. And the fact that there is a connection between our defensive coordinator, who's a cornerbacks coach, like I say, he was probably there. Maybe he really, maybe they were talking and he was like, nah, stay away from this guy. I really don't know. That's a strange one, the fact that, it happened and the Eagles weren't involved in any way because of the familiarity, or at least what I would imagine was familiarity between Hughes and, Jonathan Gannon. Because we just traded for a fourth-round cornerback with very similar compensation. Once again, a sixth-round pick, although it's – I think the sixth-round pick the Chiefs gave up was a 2022, where this the one we gave up was a 2023. I mean, who cares? You're getting a first-round talent for a sixth. And he obviously fits the outside role better, which I think is our biggest issue. So our secondary, I'd feel a lot better about it right now if it was Darius Slay, Mike Hughes, and Avonte Maddox than Darius Slay, Avonte Maddox, and Josiah Scott or Zach McPherson. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't – I still think, even though they just traded for a guy, there's still a need there. There's still an issue. But the depth is much better. You know what I mean? Like, cornerbacks have been a huge our secondary as a whole had a lot of injuries the last 2 years. So it's not a bad thing to bring these guys as far as depth, because we really didn't have depth. I mean, there was a point where I think Craig James was our projected number two cornerback. Guys like Graylin Arnold, who I thought was a safety last I heard. I don't even know who this entire secondary is a jumble. I mean, I just don't know where guys fit yet. It would feel a lot better if they got like a legit number two cornerback, and then everything would kind of fall into place a little bit better as far as the depth goes. But as of right now, I mean, I think that our only real approach is to hope and pray that Zach McPherson comes in and lights it up at camp and takes over that number two spot, which I just don't think is going to happen. Or Avonte Maddox, I guess. I mean, I really don't know. But ultimately, the Eagles, they just don't have a lot of holes. You can point out the obvious. The obvious hole is the secondary. Their secondary is just not all the way there yet. But we still have several months till the season starts, and there's still a lot of veteran options out there. I have faith that the Eagles are going to get somebody. So as a whole, I mean, this offense and this defense is really rounding into shape well. And I think the only real concern, you could question the ceiling of some of the guys that they have. I mean, we don't have a lot of holes, which is pretty much how we won the Super Bowl in 2017. We were a team that just didn't have a lot of holes, if any. I mean, they really didn't have any holes that year. Although cornerback, it was obviously an issue even back then, even though Jalen Mills and Ronald Darby stepped in and played pretty well at times. And they won the Super Bowl with cornerback being a sore spot. And it looks like they might have to try to, they might have to go into this season with the same issue unless they address it. But ultimately, the only argument I can make, and the people that are really negative about the Eagles, is you could try to make an argument that they don't have a lot of Pro Bowl caliber talent. And I think that even that is a bit misleading. If I look at the roster, and I just want to point out guys that I think could have a Pro Bowl in their future in Philadelphia, I think there's more guys on here than people would like to give credit. Obviously, Fletcher Cox is still a Pro Bowl guy. Brandon Graham's coming off of a Pro Bowl last year. Javon Hargrave, I don't know if he's got a Pro Bowl in him, but they paid him like they thought he could be. So I don't know. I mean, we all remember Timmy Jernigan had one good year for us and got a Pro Bowl. Maybe Javon Hargrave is that type of guy. He's definitely young, and he's definitely billed as an impact player. So, you know, I don't know. Maybe he has more than I'm willing to give him off of one, you know, kind of down year's first year in Philadelphia. But you definitely got two guys on the defense that have Pro Bowl potential. And if you go to the secondary, maybe Darius Slay has a better second year under a better system and better coaching. Maybe he gets back to Pro Bowl form because he's a former Pro Bowler. Anthony Harris was a top safety in the league in Minnesota for a stretch. And then obviously the entire secondary in Minnesota, the entire defense in Minnesota fell apart last year, kind of after Jonathan Gannon left, to be honest with you. So it wouldn't surprise me if Anthony Harris somehow comes back and performs at a Pro Bowl level. So they have a few guys on the defensive side, which you could argue may be capable of having outstanding years. Not necessarily Pro Bowl years, but there's some talent there. The offensive side, though, I'm a lot more bullish on. I think all five guys, if their offensive line starts the way that I want it to, which is Mailata, Land, Dickerson, Kelsey, Brooks, and Lane Johnson, I think all five of those guys have Pro Bowl potential. Not that they would all make it on the same year. That would be incredible. But ultimately, I think that those are five offensive linemen that are on the Eagles' depth chart right now that have Pro Bowl caliber potential. Whether it's in the future or the past, it's hard to say with guys coming off of major injuries. But I think that that's a lot of Pro Bowl potential right there. And then Dallas Goedert, I feel like he could take that step if he plays the entire season. I think he could take a Pro Bowl caliber step because I think he's one of the better tight ends in the league. He's not on par with Travis Kelce and George Kittle, but I don't think he's that far behind either because of his ability to block as well as be a very good receiver. I think he's a guy that could garner Pro Bowl consideration at some point in his career. And then obviously Miles Sanders made the Pro Bowl last year. A lot of people don't remember that, but he made the Pro Bowl as the Madden vote winner, which, I mean, he's an explosive player. If he plays all 16 games, I think he could make the Pro Bowl on his own merit because I think he is one of the top 10 running backs in the league right now. And he just has to be a little bit more consistent and play every game. If he can stay healthy, I think he could be a Pro Bowl player. So that's on the offensive side. That's seven guys right there on the offensive side that I feel are Pro Bowl potential players or at least above grade prospects, guys that play at a high level. And that's 7 of 11 starters. Now, if I really wanted to stretch it, you know, Devontae Smith, I mean, I think the sky's the limit for him, but I don't know if he's a Pro Bowl guy this year. But it wouldn't surprise me because of how dominant he was in college last year. It really wouldn't surprise me if he came in and lit the league on fire the first season and went to a Pro Bowl. If he played like Justin Jefferson, would it surprise anybody? I don't think so. That guy, he's that good. And I think he's that polished. I think he's that ready to contribute too. That, you know, I think that he could be, but I'm not going to put him on this list. But it's just, once again, I mean, he could be Rookie of the Year. If we're talking about guys that are getting honors, you know, getting NFL-style honors like Pro Bowls and stuff like that, he could definitely be a guy that gets a Rookie of the Year caliber year or something like that. Wouldn't surprise me at all. And that's, you know, like I said, that's why I'm more bullish on this offense than I think a lot of people are. You know, and all that, if all those guys are successful, it's going to make Jalen Hurts' job a lot easier. It's going to make him look a lot better. And I think that this offense as a whole is going to be, I think it has a lot of firepower. I think it has a lot of potential. The defense, not so much. I'm more bullish on the offense. I mean, I think the Eagles' offense could be, at best, maybe like a top 12 offense based off of what they have. And I think the defense is a little behind that. I think the defense is probably looking more like maybe a top 15 maybe a top 20. You know what I'm saying? I really think the defense could be, I think they could be top half of the league because of the defensive front for the most part. So that's really, if they are, I mean, I think that's a good season. If they, if both offense and defense are in the top half of the league, I think we're probably like 8-9, 9-8, which is kind of what I project. And I think we have a pretty good season. We have an exciting season. We have a season that's, you know, it comes down to that last game against Dallas to figure out whether or not we're getting into the playoffs or whether or not we're going to win the division. I think that the Eagles are in that trajectory. And I think a lot of people are just way more down on them than that. A lot of people I hear are saying, you know, top six draft pick again, or top, you know, high in the draft because they're going to be, you know, 6-11 or 5-12. I hear a lot of ridiculous things like that. And I just don't buy it. I just think that this team, where it matters most and where we've seen it matter most, which is offensive line, defensive line, I think we can really that can really carry this team to being competitive week in, week out, especially with this super soft schedule, the 32nd ranked overall schedule in the league. I feel like there's a lot of winnable games. And I went over that in the last podcast. I'm not going to go over that in today's podcast. I think what I'm going to do, actually, is I'm going to go ahead and end it up because I am definitely closing in on an hour. Something I didn't get to, though, by the way, Jason Kelce in a recent interview did not sound like he's ready to retire anytime soon. That was something that, you know, I really liked to hear. He was on an interview in a local radio station with, I think it was Angelo Cataldi, and he just sounded like he loved, he couldn't wait for the season to start. And as long as he feels like that, we might be able to get a few more years out of that guy, and I'd really like to see that because I think he's, as much as I enjoy watching him play, I think he's right at that border where he's a Hall of Fame player, and I feel like he might need another All-Pro or another Pro Bowl or two just to solidify that, and I'd really like to see him get to that level. So I would like to see him play a few more seasons. You know, that's something that I think all Eagles fans would love to see. I mean, he's definitely he's one of the most beloved athletes in Philly. He has to be. After that speech he gave in 2017, he's next level in Philadelphia. And I know most organizations probably don't you know, love a center the way that the Eagles fans do, but he's something special. And I would like to just see him get accolade after accolade to the point where he makes it all the way to the Hall of Fame, because I think he's a Hall of Fame player. And I think all it really takes is him playing to do that. If he plays this year, gets another Pro Bowl or All Pro, you know, and he retires, maybe he retired too short. You know what I mean? Because he didn't, coming in as a sixth round pick, it's not really easy to get those type of accolades early on. That's typically first round picks, second round picks. They have a quicker path to those, you know, because they're higher draft stock guys. They're more well known. They're thought of higher in the beginning of their career. And I think Jason Kelce suffered from that early on. I think he was always a great player. It's just that because he came in as a sixth round pick, it took a lot longer for him to get that type of recognition for the type of player that he was. So I think he's got to make up for that by getting a few more accolades towards the end of his career, because there's no stats. Linemen don't have stats. It's not like he could have, you know, 10,000 career rushing yards, but only 3 Pro Bowls, but then say, well, he did have the 10,000 career rushing yards, or, well, he did have so many receiving yards. There's nothing else to support him aside from accolades, from Pro Bowls and from All Pros. So he really needs to do that. That Super Bowl championship, which he already has won. There's just not a lot of other things that can really push a lineman over the top aside from those things. So I'd really like to see him get a few more of those, play a few more years, get a few more of those, and then right off into the sunset. I mean, it'd be nice if he was here until the Eagles turn their fortunes around completely and we're back to the point where they're competing for championships again. I mean, I'd love to see him ride off to the sunset with a Super Bowl, another Super Bowl in his back pocket. As an Eagles fan, obviously, I would love that. But, you know, I don't know how realistic that is necessarily. That's a long way away. But I really feel like the Eagles can turn this thing around pretty quickly this year and have a really good season, whether it results in winning the division or making the playoffs or not. That's the big question, but I have no concerns as far as this team competing this year. This team will compete this year, and people that think that they're just going to be 5-12 or 6-11, I think you're setting your sights way too low. I think this team is going to be. I think that last game against Dallas is going to mean something. That's just the bottom line, and I'm excited for it. I'm super excited for the season. I'm super excited to see some of these young guys because, to me, I mean, it's fun not having expectations. I mean, the Eagles every year having Super Bowl expectations. This is just going to be a year to watch these young guys and just enjoy it. And we have a lot of young guys that are worth watching. Guys like Devontae Smith, you know what I mean? That's a guy, he's worth just watching and just seeing what he could do. Miles Sanders has already been for a couple of years. I think Jalen Reagor will take a step forward this year. I think Jalen Hurts will take a step forward this year. And he's obviously an exciting player to watch. And then guys like Landon Dickerson, the way that he blocks will be exciting to watch, even though that's not something you usually hear. I mean, Jordan Mailata taking another step forward will be exciting to watch. There's so many great young potential players, especially on offense, that are really going to be fun to watch. And I'm super excited to see it. So I'm going to go ahead and end the podcast there. If you guys have made this far and you're not a follower, please hit the follow button. I really appreciate that. In the offseason, I'm going to try to do a podcast every week, but obviously once the season starts, I'll probably kick it up a notch and do maybe a couple a week. I'm probably going to start up a YouTube channel with this pretty soon too, so be on the lookout for that. I'll mention that in a future podcast where it's just basically going to be the same thing. Me just talking in front of a camera instead of a microphone. But ultimately, it's something that I'm gonna get off the ground, and I'll probably do some more Eagles-related stuff at that point. So if you're not a follower, do that. You know, hook me up. Other than that, this has been Philadelphia Eagles Talk. I'm your host, Kevin Woodman. Thanks for listening. I'm out.